All right, well, we welcome you on board at this point in time to the program, the Public Square Special. And like we told you today, we will be looking at a very, very important topic, which is the impact of nutrition, maternal, child and adolescent health and development. That will be our focus for today. And indeed, we continue from where we stopped yesterday. Remember, our focus was on the adolescent health yesterday. Today's edition on nutrition is third of a six-part series which will feature Nigerian partners of the Global Partnership on Maternal and Child Health. Well, on today's edition, Rotimi Sankore, as usual, who is a development expert and journalist, will summarize the big picture and some key data for us like you did yesterday, followed by questions and answer sessions with Dr. Obinna Onoha, who is a senior program officer at the Africa Health Budget Network. We will be starting with Mr. Rotimi for about 20 minutes. And like we told you, he'll be giving us data on some very, very important facts on today's topic, which focuses on nutrition on maternal, child and adolescent health and development. Good morning to you, Mr. Rotimi.
Hello, Schwartz.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So can you first give us a brief overview on importance of nutrition for health and development? Let's start with that.
Yes, what this is sadly one of the more overlooked matters in policy and development. And it's sad because it's something which, if it does damage, cannot be reversed after the age of five. So it's not one of these policy issues that there is time to fix or you can come back to it later. So you know, how children eat today, the the nutritional value of food that children eat can have a really huge impact on not just their health, but also their development throughout their entire lifetime. And eating food containing needed nutrients is also essential for mental as well as physical development. Experts say a healthy, balanced, nutritious diet with all essential vitamins and minerals are required for so many reasons. And I will just give three or four examples. For instance, calcium and vitamin D are essential for normal growth and development of bones. And you know that when a child is born, the first things that help it crawl, stand, walk, are bones. So without calcium and vitamin D, weak, fragile bones will lead to serious injury. A lot of people don't pay attention to, significant things like this. And in policy terms, you don't really hear federal, state, or local governments really putting this out for the public's education and awareness. Iron, for instance, supports normal cognitive development in children. In other words, without iron in diet, food, cognitive development fails, and without that, intellectual development fails. And if you ask most ordinary people whether this is an important part of government policy, sadly they will tell you no. Vitamin D is crucial for the immune system, and without the immune system, sickness follows. Or if you look at omega-3, which supports brain function. I mean, you can imagine a child that's growing up without iron and omega-3. Then cognitive development is not there. and brain function is not there. And imagine such a child being sent to school and being expected to learn. And imagine all this not being present by the age of 5 and cognitive failure and normal brain function fail. Imagine that child's future as an adolescent, as an adult in school, functioning in a work environment. I mean, it's just not going to happen. So, I mean, you can see that when I said in the beginning that federal, state, and local governments do not pay enough attention to this, even the legislative arm, you know, they don't say, oh, look, it has to be made clear to everyone, and the government has to invest in ensuring that children eat from, I mean, get food from all the different food groups, fruit and vegetable, whole grain, lean meat and fish, nuts, granules, cashew nuts, dairy products, milk, yogurt, cheese. Are these things affordable? Are they, you know, present in any society, in any community? Is there electricity to store them? Are they being transported? You know, if you go to developed countries and just walk into any average supermarket, you will see there is a reason why these things are put on display, you know, in prominent places, you know, at the entrances, with big posters. You know, here, these things are assumed to be what they call ajebota food. So you can see, I mean, by way of overview, what the significance is.
Okay, it's quite a very, very important point that you put out there. So, but what does the data tell us about the state of nutrition for health and development in Nigeria?
Oh, I mean, the data is really shocking and frightening, because around 45% of deaths among children under 5 are linked to undernutrition, which is the worst type of malnutrition. I mean, obesity is a type of malnutrition, but that's not what we are focusing on here. We are focusing on undernutrition, wasting, stunting, underweight, the low weight for age, and I mean this is a really significant factor in death of under 5 children, and it is in fact also made worse by, you know, we did water, we talked about water sanitation and hygiene the other day as well, and where there is unclean water, it leads to high levels of diarrhea. Which also then contributes to malnutrition.
Indeed.
So the data is really quite interlocked. If you want to look at the bigger impact, the data on education, intellectual ability, insecurity, and so forth, then we need to get more specific so that people can understand that the data is not just abstract. So if you look at acute malnutrition in Nigeria, children 6 months to 59 months, you will see, for instance, that it is highest in the northeast of Nigeria, followed by the northwest. And if you take into consideration all the impacts I was talking about earlier, you start to see how it manifests. In fact, the highest prevalence of what is known as global acute malnutrition, if you want to look at it at state by state level, is highest in Zamfara, followed by Katsina, then Jigawa and Sokoto. That starts to give you a better understanding of how it is impacting on education, cognitive and intellectual ability, insecurity. And if you look at stunting, which is an indicator of really chronic malnutrition, which leads to retardation, growth deficit, and a whole lot of problems.
Mm.
And it is at critical level, above 40% in Northwest and Northeast. In Northwest, it's 52.1%. In Northwest Nigeria, in Northeast, it's 44.3%. And again, if you break it down, if you start looking at it at state level, you will see again that in Katsina, it is highest at 58%.
Mm.
Zamfara 55.6%, followed by Jigawa, Sokoto, Kebbi, Kano, Kaduna, you know, and so forth like that. So you can see that hunger and malnutrition both cause and are an outcome of insecurity. And if you look at other connected data, say in terms of total fertility rates, polygamy, that is total fertility being the number of children born per woman multiplied by, say, polygamy, then you start to understand that, you know, an average guy that doesn't think anything of having 28 or 32 children,
mm.
you know, is already walking down the road of poverty and malnutrition.
Exactly.
For those children. So a lot of this data is interlinked and has really serious implications, which in fact the National Assembly, the State Houses of Assembly, the relevant commissioners and minister, you know, say the Federal Minister for Agriculture, the commissioners for agriculture, is food and nutrition security at the forefront of their policy, or do they leave it for the health sector to deal with once the disaster has happened? Because if agri and food sector deals with it properly, there is less problem for health sector.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is in Nigeria, it is a big problem for the health sector to be able to. In fact, the health sector is trying to reverse the impact. But as you can see from the data, often that impact is irreversible, especially when the children have reached the age of 5 and this malnutrition, stunting, wasting has set in already. So that's what the data tells us.
Oh.
And it has long-term implications, not just for the children, but for the development of any community, state, geopolitical zone, or in fact, the country as a whole.
Indeed, yeah. Looking at all the areas he talked about, you know, the impact on health, impact on cognitive and intellectual ability and education, and insecurity, which affects each and every one of us. Indeed, you cannot take away the fact that this is something that borders on every Nigerian and, you know, looking at the impact it has. Well, if you're just joining us, the name of the program is the Public Square Special, and our focus today is impact of nutrition on maternal, child, and adolescent health and development. We continue, you know, today's edition, which is the third of a six-part special series, which will feature Nigerian partners of the Global Partnership on Maternal and Healthcare. And today, we have listened to Mr. Rotimi Sankore, who's a development expert and journalist, who has summarized the big picture and some key data for us regarding this topic. Now, we hope to be joined by Dr. Obinna Onoha, who is a senior program officer at the Africa Health Budget Network. As I'm checking, it seems he hasn't joined the Zoom meeting yet. He's supposed to be with me, but unfortunately, he's not here. He's supposed to be answering some question bordering on this topic, but we'll try and see how we can maybe make a contact with him via the phone, just in case he's unable to join us on the Zoom meeting. And so we would crave your indulgence to just stick around with us while we try and see how we can get to connect with Dr. Obinna Onoha, Senior Program of the Africa Health Budget Network.
While we are trying to reach him, if the audience has any questions, maybe by WhatsApp or otherwise, I'm happy to engage.
Okay, yeah, so I think that would be a very good idea. In case you have any questions to ask, Mr. Rotimi is still very much on standby. If you have questions to ask, please go ahead and call on the number while we try and see how we can get in touch with Dr. Obinna. We have been focusing on this very, very important topic as it has to do with nutrition, impact of nutrition on maternal, child, and adolescent health and development. So please feel free, call on 0700-951-0000. And if you want to send in questions, please do so on 999, that is 999-30137. Okay, it's very, very important, especially, you know, it affects each and every person. There's no one who can say, well, I am exempted. As much as we have the figures and the data tilting, you know, in some parts of the country much more, but you can agree that this is a problem of, how do we call it now, a national dimension, so to speak. All right, we have someone already calling. Let's see who is here. Hello.
Hello, Suad. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
This is Abubakar calling from Gwagulada.
Welcome, Abubakar.
Kudos to our resource person. He has drawn a lot of knowledgeable insight. But I would like to go to expand the scope of your discussion.
Okay.
It should not be limited to maternal and adolescent. It is for the whole population. With the rising, escalating prices of goods and services, when people have lost food security, people are not well fed. If people are not well fed, they cannot bear healthy children. Then you cannot transfer a good genetic trait to your offspring. So it has multiple negative effects. So the word Zosin Authority to address is food sufficiency, food security for the whole population. Let the affordable food item for every Nigerian. Let no Nigerian go to bed hungry. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Rotimi, that's a very important angle of the discussion. As much as I know that, you know, the maternal thing is really very important, but I think Malam Abubakar is just trying to emphasize on the fact that with the dwindling economic fortunes of Nigerians, most Nigerians now have to resort to taking meals that may not necessarily be balanced in nature. And so this malnutrition is a potential danger to each and every Nigerian, not just, you know, the maternal that we're focused on, even though, yeah, it's a very, very important one. But what would you have to say about talking about the economy and how people just have to resort to eating things that may not necessarily be healthy for their bodies, risking malnutrition in the process, and just basically everything that has to do with that?
Well, obviously, I agree with him that malnutrition is not good for anybody, but it is particularly worse for children.
Mm.
So that's why we are focusing on maternal and child health. You know, I mean, like I said, if malnutrition is not avoided or reversed before the age of five, then it has serious impact on the child. And that is even if the child survives, because as was underlined, about 45% of child mortality, under five mortality, is linked to undernutrition. So in the first place, the child may not even survive or live. And then if the child lives after the age of five, the damage is often irreversible.
Mm.
So, you know, hence the focus on the children and the mothers. But I agree with him that malnutrition, if it affects anybody, is not a good idea at all. It's
okay.
Not a good idea at all.
Mm. Okay, we have somebody else on the line. Hello. Okay, sorry about that. Call us back. Oh, trying to get that off. It's a bit of a problem. All right, sorry about that. Really apologize for that drop call, but you can still call and let's know what your concern or question is this afternoon on 0700-951-0000. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, what are you doing?
I'm fine. Good afternoon.
this is Destiny Anthony, and good afternoon to our guest.
All right.
If what our guest is saying is, you know, the, you know, truth, which I believe is, you know, saying the right thing, then there is problem. Poverty, we know, just like my friend Abubakar, you know, was trying to say, is a big issue. But I also want to come from this angle. Can we also begin to tell our people as well that if you are not financially stable, you shouldn't be having more children.
Mm.
If you're finding it difficult as a father, you know, to feed yourself, maybe one wife and a baby, I don't think there is need for a second child. I am a person who believes in it's better to have one child well taken care of. I mean, when your child is sick, you go see a doctor. It mustn't be private. Yes, it's unfortunate that we have doctors on strike now, but assuming that the general hospitals are working, at least it's cheaper to, you know, see a pediatrician in case your child needs medical attention. Instead of walking into a chemist, you buy paracetamol, pour inside this thing and give. The reason why I'm saying this, at a particular place, I don't want to mention the name of the place, it was raining that day, and I saw a woman, you know, struggling to, you know, breastfeed the baby, and the baby was crying, which is an indication maybe the baby wasn't, you know, getting anything from the milk. Possibly the mother has not eaten. And the next thing this woman did was, because I was sitting in the car, you know, observing, was put, you know, small gare, the gare, you know, put water, allow it to soak a little bit, and put in the mouth of the baby to soak. I do not think that that is a healthy diet for a baby that is still around 8 months or so. So please, let us also begin to tell our people that, see, if I'm sorry, yes, I'm a native, but I don't believe in people having so many children, and you keep saying that God is the one who is going to take care of a child.
Okay.
It's creating a healthy, it's better for us to have few children that we can take care of than we have so many, and then they are sick. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Destiny. Very important points he highlighted there. Mr. Runtivi, do you want to comment on that?
Yes. Well, let me first say that you said if it is true, the data is true. In fact, most of the data is from the Nigeria's own National Nutrition Health and Nutrition Report, signed off by the minister. So, you know, the minister knows what I know. Is the minister acting on what he knows? No. So it is as to the question of whether it is true. It is true. Now, he raised an important point, which is people should not have more children than they can cater for, which then reflects on policy for things like reproductive and sexual health, you know, but policy on things like forced child marriage. So often, what needs to be done is for the local government and state government, especially to lead advocacy and public education, so that people know, especially the men, that first of all, it is important for the health of mother and children not to have children, you know, like on space, you know, like every 9 or 10 months, which is a tragedy where it happens. Secondly, that the number of children should be limited.
Mm.
And very importantly, that young girls that are being forced to have children through forced child marriage. So one of the reasons for this, for instance, is that there are states, there are 12 states in Nigeria where forced child marriage prevalence is between 50% and 87%. In other words, there are states where the one in two girl children have been forced into having children by the time they are 12, 13, 14. And there are states where only 13% of children, of girl children, have escaped being forced to have children. And all the data tells us that children that are born to children have a higher chance of dying before the age of five, partly because the girl children that unfortunately are the mothers do not have either the education, knowledge, or wherewithal to understand basic issues of malnutrition. And if there are mothers in circumstances where some seriously inconsiderate man has forced three or four such children, girl children, into that kind of situation, and then the man is responsible for 16, 18, 28, 32 children, then obviously the children are born into a state of poverty, which is most likely to lead to malnutrition. Even if it is not girl children being forced into child marriage, for grown-up adult children, family planning is also important. So all the, you know, everything is, as I always say, everything is connected to everything. We can't take malnutrition as a standalone issue. It is connected to water, sanitation, and hygiene. If not, there will be diarrhea. It is connected to reproductive and sexual health. If not, there will be too many children or too many children on space, which will then result in poverty. You know, and of course, the food and agriculture, food security and agriculture policy is crucial. Even electricity is crucial, because a country like Nigeria, we should be at 200,000 megawatts of electricity. The global sustainable development standard is 1,000 megawatts per 1 million people. We are at 5,300 megawatts maximum at any point in time. The capacity is 12,000. But if we try to go past 5,300, the grid collapses. Now, what does that mean? It means that the electricity to store the food is not available in most communities. So a lot of food waste, tomatoes, fruit, vegetable, we have mango season, we have cashew season, we have this season. We have, if you go to the countries where none of these things is grown, you will find all those fruits and vegetables available 24/7, even in the dead of winter. So everything is connected to everything. Hence the need for coordinated policy between key ministries. So yes, the caller is right, unfortunately, but as we can see, the food security and nutrition policy, it is not at the forefront of local governments, many state governments. To say something like that, the federal government even tries. I mean, like a lot of the data I've been talking about is from the Federal Health and Nutrition Report. So there is even at least some effort to acknowledge, even if it is not enough. Most of this work needs to be done at state and local government level.
Indeed. Mr. Otumi, you've talked, you know, at a very broad level concerning this. Indeed, it's very true. I don't know if we have any hope, though, you know, looking at everything, because I'm also looking at how this affects, you know, based on the data that, or the data you gave to us, and looking at the areas that this affects the most, the northeast, northwest, and then, you know, states like Zamfara, Katsina, Ajigawa, as they have to do with global acute malnutrition. Most of the things are intertwined with religious beliefs, you know, when it comes to family and children, bringing in children to the world. You get to hear, like Mr. Destiny was making reference, something like, it's God who take care of the children. And so children just keep getting churned out without any adequate plans to take care of these children, to feed them, to take them to school. And so the population keeps growing, and it poses a big danger, like a ticking bomb. You know, instead of a productive and healthy population, we seem to be having it in the opposite direction. How? What's the hope we have in terms of turning this trend around?
Well, obviously, we have to be sensitive when we are talking about people's religious beliefs, but the data does not lie. And it is also important to explain that often it is interpretation of religion that is the issue, not the religion itself. And also that it is not just one specific religion. For instance, we are talking about first child marriage. Many people, it's not in the public consciousness that in a state like Bayelsa, first child marriage is at 50% prevalence, which is one in two girl children. So you could say that, you know, nice Christian gentlemen also indulge in this. If you look across Africa, for instance, a lot of the high prevalence of first child marriage is in countries like Zimbabwe, Malawi, Zambia. I mean, these are predominantly Christian countries. So it is not, you know, it is not a religion that is practiced in the Northwest or Northeast that is mainly responsible. There is also a cultural element to it. But if you want to talk about the religion and the interpretation of the religion, then you need to look further apart. So in Saudi Arabia, which is the custodian of, you know, perceived as the custodian of Islam, they have even raised the level of marriage for girls to 18. This was done last year, precisely to try and avoid some of these problems. So if they recognize and done it, then it is important that states and communities in Nigeria take notes. I mean, in there are Muslim countries where the age of marriage for girls is 21. So you can see that governance has a big part to play. I mean, if you look globally, I mean, in countries like Turkey, they legislated against things like that as far back as 1926, not last year, not a decade ago, 1926, Turkey legislated against first child marriage.
Yeah.
In Africa, countries like Tunisia, in the 1960s, I believe in 1963, Tunisia legislated against first child marriage and discourage people from polygamy. So you can see, you know, it's interpretation of religion and governance. I mean, it doesn't help when, for instance, the former governor of Zamfara indulges in that kind of thing, gets in a 14-year-old girl from Egypt and claiming it is his religion and encouraging it. And when ordinary people that think, oh, okay, you know, the governor, now senator is doing it, there is nothing wrong with it, then you see this kind of scenario in which a lot of men have 12, 16, 32 children, and they on health, on education, on insecurity, on these children being more easily recruited by banditry. And by the way, we should mention that where there is high maternal mortality, it means there are a lot of orphans. And when there are a lot of orphans, it also means they are more easily recruited by bandits and extreme. So it's important to see the big picture, not just in Nigeria, but across Africa and globally. But it is important to underline, it is not the religion that is the problem. It is interpretation of that religion. And as you can see, these things also happen in Christian communities predominantly Christian countries across Africa. May I also add that geography is an important part. It needs to be factored in, because if you look at some of the northern states, for instance, you will see that climate change has set in more brutally there. So, you know, access, you know, to fertile land, food, farming, storage, electricity, and, you know, affects some states in the north more than others. So even where the food is grown, it can be stored or processed. Or there is lack of water and so forth. So it's important to see the big picture.
All right. Mr. Rotimi, I'm glad to announce that we have Dr. Onoha joining us. For those of you... So Dr. Onoha joins us via the phone line. He is... The senior program officer at the Africa Health Budget Network. Sorry, I got distracted a bit there. Dr. Onoha, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Hello.
Thank you for joining us. We've been waiting a long time to have you join us, but at long last we can breathe a sigh of relief. Mr. Rotimi Edo has really been, you know, helping us look through or wade through the issues. And like you know, today we are discussing on the impact of nutrition on maternal, child, and adolescent health and development. So let me just go straight to the point because we don't have so much time. The audience at some point in time will still continue with their questions. What should be done by way of government policy and investment to improve nutrition for maternal and child health development, sir? Let's take on that question first.
Okay, thank you very much. So very straight to the point, Nigeria is very replete with so many policies. We do have a lot of policies around nutrition, over 20 by my count, and this cuts across various sectors in health, in agriculture, in education, and even most recent of them is the National Multisectoral Plan of Action for Food and Nutrition. This was signed just this the beginning of this year, in January. And we're looking at the 5 years, it's about from 2021 to 2025. So what I'm saying is we have the policies, but then policies don't run by themselves. They need to be backed up with adequate funding. Funding is key. Putting our money where our mouth is. That is basically what the issue is all about. I'm not just advocating for more money or putting more funding, but let us ensure that there is timely release of these funds so that they are quickly used to implement these nutritional programs. We have very excellent plans on ground, but we need to see them through. We need to implement them to the letter. That is what it's all about. I can give you an example with the current budget, the 2021 budget. Last year in 2020, we have an item called ready-to-use therapeutic food. There is a budget line for that, and this is supposed to support primary healthcare intervention on acute malnutrition. But in the 2021 budget, this budget item is non-existent. And we're talking about how things are getting worse. So why would you now take away a budget line that is supposed to improve the nutrition status of low-income people or people in disadvantaged areas? So very briefly, I keep on mentioning the fact that there needs to be improved funding and efficient use of these funds, basically.
All right, indeed. Improved funding, because nothing ever goes down, you know, to a logical conclusion or even meaningfully well if there isn't adequate funding. Very true. Now, let's look at it. You know, we always look at, try to look at it from different angles, the tripartite, angle, like I would like to put it. What can citizens do to improve nutrition for maternal and child health and development? You know, because before government comes in, of course, children are born into family. A wife is within the family circle. So what can citizens do at that particular level to improve on all of this that we're talking about?
So if I get you correctly, are you trying to say from the perspective of the individual, what can they do?
Yes, what can citizens do? Yes, the individual.
What can citizens do? Well, this is a very tough one. There's no denying the fact that the status of living of many Nigerians have been affected, especially with the COVID-19 pandemic. And many families are struggling to even, maintain themselves. So this is really an issue. There's really no other way I can beat about the bush. The truth of the matter is that government needs to step up. The programs on the ground need to come up. They need to ensure that these programs are up and running to support the lives of citizens, to support the lives of people who have been affected. We have so many programs, activities that are supposed to be implemented that would really improve the livelihoods of people. And this is what we signed up for. That is why we have taxes. So why isn't this money being used to benefit the people? And it all comes back to winning the hearts of the population. Things have gone bad. The government needs to win back the confidence of people. Things need to start working so that they can see the improvement. And then they realize that, okay, we have a government that works, and therefore whatever they tell us, we will be able to listen to them and we will be able to support them as well. So I wouldn't want to put this on the people, because the idea, the truth of the matter is that even the little that we have, we don't see much happening. I can give you the example of the crisis within our medical sector, the doctors. They are calling for payment of their salaries, which they've not been paid. Many people are talking about 6 months. People are hungry. They have families. So in that situation, how would you expect them to be able to fend for themselves, to buy nutritious foods, foods that can be able to help them? How do you want mothers to feed well so that they can be able to breastfeed? Because it all comes back to breastfeeding, which is the basic food that can ensure that the livelihood of a child is maintained. So we are coming back to the buck still stops at the government. Provide the funding. Let our programs work. Let the community management for acute malnutrition sites be up and running. Establish more baby-friendly initiative hospitals. Establish more school feeding programs. Fund these things. This is what we're talking about. Being optimized by annual maternal, newborn, and child health weeks, in short, which is called NMCH weeks. This thing, like I said, is biannual. It happens twice in a year. And this costs across all the 774 local government areas. So any local government area that has a primary health care center, they are expected to hold NMCH weeks twice in a year. This is to boost the services that they already have by providing supplementation to mothers, making sure immunization rates go up. These are some of the programs that improve nutrition. So still again, it's not about telling what people should do. Create the enabling environment. Let our hospitals be well equipped. Let there be adequate human resources for help. And then our nutrition indices can be improved.
Indeed.
This is what I think.
All right. So you work with the Africa Health Budget Network, and I know that that is part of the civil society. So that brings me to the next question about what is the civil society doing to improve nutrition for maternal and child health development?
Okay. Thank you. Yes. Civil society organizations are doing a lot. We have so many of them that are really bending over their backs to continue to be the voice of the people. And for every other civil society organization out there who may not be listening or are listening, I commend you all. And now, to speak to what we do, as I did mention, we are the voice of the people. We reside in the communities where the problems are really felt. And therefore, we can be able to reach out to them in their communities. We reach out to their traditional and religious leaders to sensitize them on what government does. So in the first place, what we do is basically inform and sensitize the communities where we work with. So let them know that these are the programs, these are the activities that the government has for the people. And now it is for them to be able to demand and say, okay, this is what is our right, and therefore we can go and access them. So improving the information and ensuring that there is demand uptake of these nutrition services. That's number one. Number two, we also work with the media, like what we are doing right now. Because it is one thing to try to inform people, but you can only do so much. Reaching the media is able to propagate these messages so that they go far through radio, through television, even social media that we have right now. These are one of the ways. So it is about ensuring that there is a wide outreach to people. The more people are aware, the more they will be able to demand better services from the government. This is also what we do. And then we've been talking on the side of what we do for the people. Then now, as the middlemen, we also advocate to the government themselves, both at the national level, at the state level, and even at the local government level. We are the ones who interface with them. We have various working groups on nutrition, on environment, on health, in many areas. CSOs are the ones who ask to be on the seat so that we are aware of what are the things that are being planned for the people. and then we can be able to carry the minds of the people and say, okay, you have this in mind, but these are the things that really matter to the people. Can we have a common ground? So it is all about negotiation, advocating, and like we keep on mentioning, whatever that we want to do, it has to be backed by funding. So if there isn't sufficient money in a budget line, it is the CSOs who speak up and say, dear government, this is what the people need, please increase funding for this. And then of course the monitoring and accountability has to come in.
Mm.
It has to be balances and checks. Mm. This is also where the CSOs come into play.
Okay.
So the work is about information, working with the media, and of course advocating.
Yeah. Indeed. Thank you so much for this wonderful input. Well, we still want to throw open the phone lines to you, listener out there, in case you still have comments to make, you still want to ask questions, or you want to throw in more light on the areas that we've touched so far. You just want to add your own bit, a bit of input. We would really appreciate that this afternoon. So the number to call before we come to the end of the show, by the way, we just have 12 minutes to go. So you can quickly dial the number 0700-951-0000. Once again, 0700-951-0000. We have been talking with two guests, of course, Mr. Rutimi, who is our stable guest on every other show here, you know, who is a development expert and journalist, and who has summarized the big picture and some key data for us, has talked to us extensively about that, and also Dr. Obinna Onoha, Senior Program Officer at the Africa Health Budget, okay, Budget Network. So do call in with your thoughts, do call in with your questions if you have any, on nutrition, yes, the impact of nutrition, maternal, child, and adolescent health and development. Okay, we have people calling. Let's take on this caller. Hello. Sorry, call us back. Good afternoon. Uh-oh. Also lost that. Don't know what happened there. Okay, we lost Mr. Rutimi. Let's just try and reconnect with him as we also take on the caller. Hello. Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This is Dr. Shah with Sleiman Online.
Welcome, Doctor.
Let me start by appreciating you for this wonderful topic, which is critical in our life.
Mm.
And I have listened to so many contributors. One area I just want to chip in is the area on enlightenment and educating people to know the composition of the food they need to take.
Okay.
You will be surprised. You see some people, it's not about poverty. Their sources at their disposal, but you end up seeing them in a particular day, taking a particular class of food throughout.
Mm.
And this could probably lead to the malnutrition we have been talking about. So it is not all true about the poverty. Even those with the resources, they need to be educated as to which combination of the food will give them adequate diet.
Mm.
You even go to villages and see people taking a protein class of food to the market and buy carbohydrate come back to the house. So our people, particularly at the rural area, and this is coming back to government in, you know, funding, publicity, and awareness campaign for people to know. You imagine somebody taking beans, chickens, and the rest to the market and buy bread, come back to the house while he has eaten a corn food in the morning. So it's really, we really need to look at that aspect. I think it's also going to help a lot.
Okay.
This is the area I want to contribute while thanking you for this wonderful topic of discussion that we really need in our life.
Thank you so much. Dr. Onoha, I'm sure you heard that one of the major issues that we have, like the doctor rightly pointed out, is ignorance on the side of Nigerians. We keep talking about balanced diet, but how many people even really know what composes a balanced diet?
Yes. this is a tricky one. But then the question is, can you be able to afford what is a balanced diet?
Mm.
That is the other side of the coin. Because the truth of the matter is that the so-called cheap foods that we have are the ones that people can afford.
Exactly.
And therefore, that is what drives the reason why many people may be eating unhealthy foods nowadays. It's easy, it's fast, and so on. But then, like I did say, when we can be able to improve our programming, especially in the agricultural sector, ensuring that there is more food in the economy, and not just having blanket policies that restrict importation and the like. From the ground up, when that happens, we can be able to provide adequate nourishing food for the population. There are storage capacities where farmers can be able to keep these foods, which will be able to bring down the price, and then people can get this at an affordable rate. If you recall, during the height when the pandemic began, this was around the period when the onion season was just about to start, and many farmers did not go to the farm because of the pandemic, and they lost out during that period. And then when the rain started, and by the time they started to come out, these onions started to go bad because they didn't save them to preserve them properly. And with the little that was produced, it had to hike the price. So this is one of the examples.
Okay. Now, Mr. Rosemary, you want to add, you want to chip in something to that?
Yes. Yes, our esteemed listener made an important point about awareness of the classes and categories of food. Maybe he missed the beginning of the program where I was talking about the different food groups, fruit and vegetable, whole grains, lean meat and fish, especially oily fish, nuts like groundnuts, cashew nuts, dairy products like milk, yogurt, and cheese. But he is correct that with some people it is not resources. It is lack of awareness. And that's why I also said that a lot of work needs to be done at state and local government level. Clear budget lines for public education and awareness is very crucial, as well as even in schools, for people to understand. But Dr. Noah made the bigger point, which is that poverty is an issue. Look, we have roughly half the country living in extreme poverty. Roughly 100 million people, you know, the data from the Bureau of Statistics, living in extreme poverty. Unemployment is at 33%. Underemployment is at 22%. Combined, 55%. So without any doubt, you know, poverty and income or lack of income plays a big role. Like I said, lack of electricity impacts on food security and nutrition. If you look at those food groups, fruit and vegetable need power, electricity to store. Lean meat and fish need electricity to store. Dairy like milk, yogurt and cheese need electricity. So if we have a 95% deficit in power, we're at 5,300 megawatts, where we should be at 200,000. You know, it's a problem.
200,000, it sounds like something we can think of in our dream, or we can dream of.
We can get there. Can I just add quickly that in states and the FCT, it's important to have people that are responsible for these policies. In the FCT, for instance, who do we know that is responsible for food security and nutrition? You know, if you go to many of local governments, which councillor do we know that is, I mean, there should be councillors designated as responsible for education, for sexual and reproductive health, for gender equality and women's rights, for education, for, you know, all these things we have mentioned that are linked to food security and nutrition. At local government level, we can't find anybody so designated. Even in some states, we can't find. In FCT, you know, as they say on the street, who side?
Exactly. Well, some very important points you're raising there. We have barely 3 minutes before the top of the hour, too, and we can still give room for one more call, just in case you are still harboring some thoughts you want to share with us today. Please feel free. Dial the number. Once again, 0700-951-0000. Even as we begin to run off on the special program on impact of nutrition on maternal, child, and adolescent health and development. We've had a very, very interesting conversation this afternoon, and Dr. Onohan, Mr. Rutini Sankore have given us some beautiful insights into some of the issues raised. Okay, we'll take the last caller, and that will be it. Hello?
Yeah, good afternoon, Swat.
Good afternoon.
My greetings to your guest. My name is Emmanuel, Fisher President.
Welcome.
Thank you. The question I want to ask, can civil society organization help us compel the government to regulate the number of beds, let me say bed rate in Nigeria? See, all this mortality and malnutrition he talked about is as a result of giving birth to plenty children, just like what he said. So I think it should help us advise the government to put a law that nobody should give birth, either is a boy child or a girl child, God bless you with either two or three. Let us just maintain those things and have a fair environment in this country.
Mm.
Thank you.
All right. Interesting. I think the future president there, Dr. Onoha, is trying to talk about population control. We saw that happen with China at some point in time until, you know, I think recently where it was said you can have more than one child, that sort of policy. Do you think this would go in any way to help with these issues of what we're talking about, nutrition on maternal, child, and adolescent health and development?
Yes, thank you again, Swad, and thank you, our esteemed caller, for this. Well, this is sort of it's a double-edged sword. For one thing, you have to, first of all, increase the literacy rate of your people. So it comes down to the fact that for someone to be educated, they need to have the right nutrition, right? They need to be well-developed so that they can be able to comprehend the situation. There's a cognitive development that needs to happen for them to go to school, and they can be able to excel. And then, when you now explain to them the dangers of why it is really not helpful as the most populous nation to keep on having many babies being brought into the world, because you need to factor in so many things. Can you cater for them? Can you send them to school? Can you feed them? So it's all interrelated, but we have to start somewhere.
Mm.
Now, when you now say we have to just put a law that prevents people and say they shouldn't do this, they shouldn't do that, the first question I would ask is, have you won?